Chapter 19. Afternoon, when the uproar was at its height, as of one of those animals, baited by a thousand dogs. I recall him bending his aching head, supported on his bony hand, over the book on his desk, and wretchedly endeavoring to get on with his tiresome work, amidst an uproar that might have made the Speaker of the House of Commons giddy. Boys started in and out of their places, playing at puss in the corner with other boys. There were laughing boys, singing boys, talking boys, dancing boys, howling boys. Boys shuffled with their feet, boys whirled about him, grinning, making faces, mimicking him behind his back and before his eyes, mimicking his poverty, his boots, his coat, his mother, everything belonging to him that they should have had consideration for. Silence. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Mr. Mell, suddenly rising up and striking his desk with the book. What does this mean? It's impossible to bear it. It's maddening. How can you do it to me, boys? Apostrophe, it was my book that he struck his desk with, and as I stood beside him, following his eye as it glanced round the room, I saw the boys all stop, some suddenly surprised, some half afraid, and some sorry perhaps. Steerforth's place was at the bottom of the school, at the opposite end of the long room. He was lounging with his back against the wall, and his hands in his pockets, and looked at Mr. Mell with his mouth shut up, as if he were whistling, when Mr. Mell looked at him. Silence, Mr. Steerforth. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Mell. Silence yourself, apostrophe, said Steerforth, turning red. Whom are you talking to? Apostrophe, apostrophe, sit down, apostrophe, said Mr. Mell. Sit down yourself, apostrophe, said Steerforth, and mind your business. Apostrophe, there was a titter, and some applause. But Mr. Mell was so white that silence immediately succeeded. And one boy, who had darted out behind him to imitate his mother again, changed his mind and pretended to want a pen mended. If you think, Steerforth, apostrophe, said Mr. Mell, that I am not acquainted with the power you can establish over any mind here, he laid his hand, without considering what he did, as I supposed, upon my head, or that I have not observed you, within a few minutes, urging your juniors on to every sort of outrage against me, you are mistaken. Apostrophe, I don't give myself the trouble of thinking at all about you, apostrophe, said Steerforth, coolly. So I'm not mistaken, as it happens. Apostrophe, and when you make use of your position of favoritism here, sir, apostrophe, pursued Mr. Mell, with his lip trembling very much, to insult a gentleman, apostrophe, a what? Where is he? Apostrophe, said Steerforth. Here somebody cried out, shame, J. Steerforth. Too bad. Apostrophe, it was Traddles, whom Mr. Mell instantly discomfited by bidding him hold his tongue. To insult one who is not fortunate in life, sir, and who never gave you the least offense, and the many reasons for not insulting whom you are old enough and wise enough to understand, apostrophe, said Mr. Mell, with his lips trembling more and more, you commit a mean and base action. You can sit down or stand up as you please, sir. Copperfield, go on. Apostrophe, young Copperfield, apostrophe, said Steerforth, coming forward up the room, stop a bit. I tell you what, Mr. Mell, once for all, when you take the liberty of calling me mean or base, or anything of that sort, you are an impudent beggar. You are always a beggar, you know, but when you do that, you are an impudent beggar. Apostrophe, I am not clear whether he was going to strike Mr. Mell, or Mr. Mell was going to strike him, or there was any such intention on either side. I saw a rigidity come upon the whole school, as if they had been turned into stone, and found Mr. Creakle in the midst of us, with Tungay at his side, and Mrs. and Miss Creakle looking in at the door, as if they were frightened. Mr. Mell, with his elbows on his desk, and his face in his hands, sat, for some moments, quite still. Apostrophe, Mr. Mell, apostrophe, said Mr. Creakle, shaking him by the arm, and his whisper was so audible now, that Tungay felt it unnecessary to repeat his words. You have not forgotten yourself, I hope? No, sir, no, returned the master, showing his face, and shaking his head, and rubbing his hands in great agitation. No, sir, no. I have remembered myself, I know, Mr. Creakle, I have not forgotten myself, I have remembered myself, sir. I could wish you had remembered me a little sooner, Mr. Creakle. It would have been more kind, sir, more just, sir. It would have saved me something, sir. Mr. Creakle, looking hard at Mr. Mell, put his hand on Tungay's shoulder, and got his feet upon the form close by, and sat upon the desk. After still looking hard at Mr. Mell from his throne, as he shook his head, and rubbed his hands, and remained in the same state of agitation, Mr. Creakle turned to Steerforth, and said, Now, sir, as he don't condescend to tell me, what is this? Steerforth evaded the question for a little while, looking in scorn and anger on his opponent, and remaining silent. I could not help thinking even in that interval, I remember, what a noble fellow he was in appearance, and how homely and plain Mr. Mell looked opposed to him. What did he mean by talking about favorites, then? Said Steerforth at length. Favorites? Repeated Mr. Creakle, with the veins in his forehead swelling quickly. Who talked about favorites? He did, said Steerforth. And pray, what did you mean by that, sir? Demanded Mr. Creakle, turning angrily on his assistant. I meant, Mr. Creakle, he returned in a low voice, as I said, that no pupil had a right to avail himself of his position of favoritism to degrade me. To degrade you? Said Mr. Creakle. My stars. But give me leave to ask you, Mr. What's your name? And here Mr. Creakle folded his arms, cane and all, upon his chest, and made such a knot of his brows, that his little eyes were hardly visible below them. Whether, when you talk about favorites, you showed proper respect to me? To me, sir, said Mr. Creakle, darting his head at him suddenly, and drawing it back again, the principal of this establishment, and your employer. It was not judicious, sir, I am willing to admit, said Mr. Mell. I should not have done so, if I had been cool. Here Steerforth struck in. Then he said I was mean, and then he said I was base, and then I called him a beggar. If I had been cool, perhaps I shouldn't have called him a beggar. But I did, and I am ready to take the consequences of it. Without considering, perhaps, whether there were any consequences to be taken, I felt quite in a glow at this gallant speech. It made an impression on the boys too, for there was a low stir among them, though no one spoke a word. I am surprised, Steerforth, although your candor does you honor, said Mr. Creakle, does you honor, certainly I am surprised, Steerforth. I must say, that you should attach such an epithet to any person employed and paid in Salem House, sir. Steerforth gave a short laugh. That's not an answer, sir, said Mr. Creakle, to my remark. I expect more than that from you, Steerforth. If Mr. Mell looked homely, in my eyes, before the handsome boy, it would be quite impossible to say how homely Mr. Creakle looked. Let him deny it, said Steerforth. Deny that he is a beggar, Steerforth? Cried Mr. Creakle. Why, where does he go a begging? If he is not a beggar himself, his near relations one, said Steerforth. It's all the same. He glanced at me, and Mr. Mell's hand gently patted me upon the shoulder. I looked up with a flush upon my face and remorse in my heart, but Mr. Mell's eyes were fixed on Steerforth. He continued to pat me kindly on the shoulder, but he looked at him. Since you expect me, Mr. Creakle, to justify myself, said Steerforth, And to say what I mean, what I have to say is, that his mother lives on charity in an almshouse. Apostrophe, Mr. Mel still looked at him, and still patted me kindly on the shoulder, and said to himself, in a whisper, if I heard right. Yes, I thought so. Apostrophe, Mr. Creakle turned to his assistant, with a severe frown and labored politeness. Now, you hear what this gentleman says, Mr. Mel. Have the goodness, if you please, to set him right before the assembled school. Apostrophe, he is right, sir, without correction. Apostrophe, returned Mr. Mel, in the midst of a dead silence. What he has said is true. Apostrophe, be so good then as declare publicly, will you? Apostrophe, said Mr. Creakle, putting his head on one side, and rolling his eyes round the school, whether it ever came to my knowledge until this moment? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I believe not directly, apostrophe, he returned. Why, you know not, apostrophe, said Mr. Creakle. Don't you, man? Apostrophe, I apprehend you never supposed my worldly circumstances to be very good, apostrophe, replied the assistant. You know what my position is, and always has been, here. Apostrophe, I apprehend, if you come to that, apostrophe, said Mr. Creakle, with his veins swelling again bigger than ever, that you've been in a wrong position altogether, and mistook this for a charity school. Mr. Mel, we'll part, if you please. The sooner the better. Apostrophe, there is no time, apostrophe, answered Mr. Mel, rising, like the present. Apostrophe, sir, to you. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Creakle. I take my leave of you, Mr. Creakle, and all of you, apostrophe, said Mr. Mel, glancing round the room, and again patting me gently on the shoulders. James Steerforth, the best wish I can leave you is that you may come to be ashamed of what you have done today. At present I would prefer to see you anything rather than a friend to me, or to anyone in whom I feel an interest. Apostrophe, once more he laid his hand upon my shoulder, and then taking his flute and a few books from his desk, and leaving the key in it for his successor, he went out of the school, with his property under his arm. Mr. Creakle then made a speech, through tongue, in which he thanked Steerforth for asserting, though perhaps too warmly, the independence and respectability of Salem House, and which he wound up by shaking hands with Steerforth. While we gave three cheers I did not quite know what for, but I supposed for Steerforth, and so joined in them ardently, though I felt miserable. Mr. Creakle then caned Tommy Traddles for being discovered in tears, instead of cheers, on account of Mr. Mel's departure, and went back to his sofa, or his bed, or wherever he had come from. We were left to ourselves now, and looked very blank, I recollect, on one another. For myself, I felt so much self-reproach and contrition for my part in what had happened, that nothing would have enabled me to keep back my tears, but the fear that Steerforth, who often looked at me, I saw, might think it unfriendly, or, I should rather say, considering our relative ages, and the feeling with which I regarded him, undutiful if I showed the emotion which distressed me. He was very angry with Traddles, and said he was glad he had caught it. Poor Traddles, who had passed the stage of lying with his head upon the desk, and was relieving himself as usual with a burst of skeletons, said he didn't care. Mr. Mel was ill-used. Who has ill-used him, you girl? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Steerforth. Why, you have, apostrophe, returned Traddles. What have I done? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Steerforth. What have you done? Apostrophe, apostrophe, retorted Traddles. Hurt his feelings, and lost him his situation. Apostrophe, his feelings? Apostrophe, apostrophe, repeated Steerforth disdainfully. His feelings will soon get the better of it, I'll be bound. His feelings are not like yours, Miss Traddles. As to his situation, which was a precious one, wasn't it? Do you suppose I am not going to write home, and take care, that he gets some money? Polly? Apostrophe, we thought this intention very noble in Steerforth, whose mother was a widow, and rich, and would do almost anything, it was said, that he asked her. We were all extremely glad to see Traddles so put down, and exalted Steerforth to the skies. Especially when he told us, as he condescended to do, that what he had been done expressly for us, and for our cause, and that he had conferred a great boon upon us by unselfishly doing it. But I must say that, when I was going on with a story in the dark that night, Mr. Mell's old flute seemed more than once to sound mournfully in my ears, and that when at last Steerforth was tired, and I lay down in my bed, I fancied it playing so sorrowfully somewhere, that I was quite wretched. I soon forgot him in the contemplation of Steerforth, who, in an easy amateur way, and without any book, he seemed to me to know everything by heart, took some of his classes until a new master was found. The new master came from a grammar school, and before he entered on his duties, dined in the parlor one day, to be introduced to Steerforth. Steerforth approved of him highly, and told us he was a brick. Without exactly understanding what learned distinction was meant by this, I respected him greatly for it, and had no doubt, whatever of his superior knowledge. Though he never took the pains with me, not that I was anybody that Mr. Mell had taken. There was only one other event in this half year, out of the daily school life, that made an impression upon me which still survives. It survives for many reasons. One afternoon, when we were all harassed into a state of dire confusion, and Mr. Creakle was laying about him dreadfully, Tungay came in, and called out in his usual strong way, "Visitors for Copperfield!" ... A few words were interchanged between him and Mr. Creakle, as, who the visitors were, and what room they were to be shown into, and then I, who had, according to custom, stood upon the announcement being made, and felt quite faint with astonishment, was told to go by the back stairs, and get a clean frill on, before I repaired to the dining room. These orders I obeyed, in such a flutter and... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.